I have a story for you this morning. It is from The Ethiopian Tattoo Shop by Edward Hayes. We have read from this before. And this story is called Hannah's Harmonica. The radio that Sunday morning had predicted that the temperature would climb to 103 degrees and that it would be one of the hottest August 3rds in the history of the city. The temperature at 9 o'clock was already 88 and rising as Hannah began to cross 13th Street on her way to church. Hannah was a heavy-set, middle-aged black woman. This Sunday morning, she wore her favorite white dress, and although a large woman, the dress gave her an appearance of luminous buoyancy. With care for her white high heels, she made her way gingerly across the black asphalt street, crossing which already had the feel of licorice. Hannah was on her way to the 10 o'clock morning worship at St. Stephen's Abyssinian Baptist Church. As was her custom, she was taking a shortcut through the tiny city park on the other side of which was St. Stephen's. The one square block park was an oasis of green in the middle of the old, run-down, red brick apartment houses that bordered it on all sides. In the very middle of the small green park was a giant old oak tree, perhaps 80 to 100 feet tall, whose branches spread out wide on all sides, umbrella-like. The narrow footpath passed under the tree's umbrella branches, and on the side of the path, directly across from the giant tree, was a green wooden park bench. When Hannah reached the bench, she sat down to rest, taking a large white handkerchief from her purse to wipe her brow. "Sweet Jesus, but it's hot today," she said. "Yes," came a reply. "It's summer, you know." Hannah looked around, but saw no one. The park was empty at this hour of the morning. She stood up and walked around the tree's gray trunk, but could find no one. She sat down again, saying to herself, "Sweet Jesus, Hannah, the heat's getting to you." She then opened her purse again, removing an antique silver harmonica, and began to play it softly. The old harmonica had belonged to her daddy, now dead so many years. The music that Hannah played was a blend of blues and ragtime. As the harmonica's music drifted out across the park, Hannah reflected on the fact that her daddy never went to church during the summertime. Sunday mornings, when she and her mother were off to church, he would sit on their back porch and play his harmonica. When her mother, a staunch churchgoer, would scold him for staying at home, regardless of how hot it might be, her daddy would only reply, "Preaching and praising the Lord only raises the body heat. And in weather like this, the body is hot enough without compounding the problem with holy heat." This Sunday, Hannah wished that she could stay home because it was just too hot to go to church. But her best friend, Ruby Robinson, was sick with cancer. There was to be a healing service that morning at St. Stephen's. There was, of course, as always, Leroy. Leroy was her 28-year-old, late-mature, unmarried, and unemployed son. Ever since her husband had died several years ago, she had tried everything. She had prayed, petitioned, and pleaded with Leroy. This morning, she would add another ring of petitions to her endless chain of prayers for the child. She put down her silver harmonica, wiping her brow with her handkerchief as she said to herself, "Sweet Jesus, but I wish they could have church outside here in the park this morning." "Why not?" once again came a mysterious reply. "Sweet Jesus," said Hannah, "what's coming over me?" "Incorrect, Hannah," returned the reply. Jesus is my son. I'm his father. Jesus stared beady holes of disbelief at the giant tree as the wind swept gently through the tall upper branches, rustling the green leaves. That's right, Hannah, continued the voice. I am who you think I am. This time, no sweet Jesus came from Hannah. She only sat stone still, staring at the giant tree. I like trees, came the voice again. In fact, I like them best of all the things that I've made. Whenever I come to be among my human children, it is one of my favorite forms to take. I like trees. Their branches reach up, touching the heavens, and their roots are sunk deep down in the dark earth. I'm like that, Hannah. Half in the earth and half in the heavens. My trees also do the best job of preaching my most important lesson. They are living gospels of summer, autumn, winter, and spring. Each winter they die only to come to life again in the spring. Think about that, Hannah, because I'm letting you in on one of the best kept secrets in all history. Then the voice from the tree laughed and laughed. You mean, Hannah said, that God, I mean, that you are a tree? No, answered the voice, not exclusively. Over the many years, I have been fire, wind, a mountain here and there, and of course, dear people, special people, but trees, yes, trees are my very favorite disguises. Remember the tree of life in the Garden of Eden? It was not by accident that my son Buddha reached enlightenment in a forest under a bow tree in India. My son Mohammed taught about the tree of paradise. The Druids had their sacred oak. And when it came time for my beloved son Jesus to die, I did not abandon him because he was nailed to me. I held him in my wooden arms like a broken-hearted mother. I held him high so that all of the folks could see how much I loved him and how much he loved me. Lord God, said Hannah, I know this ain't no dream because it's too hot here to be a dream, but why are you telling me all these beautiful things? God laughed loud and hard. Hannah, it's your music, your harmonica music. It touches my heart. Scott Joplin, isn't it? He's one of my favorites, too. Hannah looked down with amazement at her daddy's old harmonica. The voice went on. You see, Hannah, laughter and music are the language of heaven. They're my sounds. All music is sacred. Not simply churchy music, but all of it. Rock and roll, rhythm and blues, country, classical, jazz and ragtime. But Lord, asked Hannah, why is music your sound? I don't understand. And laughter? If laughter is your sound, why don't we hear it in church? Hannah, dearest, said God, the deepest mysteries are expressed in the most common of ways. Music is not just the handmaid of religion. At its heart, it is religion. Music is harmony. And whenever you play it or really listen to it, you proclaim the mystery of my being. And laughter, that's the language of children. There are no grown-ups in heaven. Silence followed this statement as Hannah slowly turned these thoughts in her heart. The voice continued, all my children are meant to be musicians, for the making of music is the way of returning to me. All my special children were musicians, Krishna and his flute, Pan and his pipes, Apollo and his harp, and Matthew, Mark, and the other two left out an important bit of information about my boy Jesus when they forgot to tell that his mama taught him some real catchy tunes on the shepherd's flute. Not bad on the harp either, but he probably got that from his great-grandfather David. Remember, Hannah, music is the way of return. Whenever you play music or truly listen to it, you are in me and I am in you. Hannah raised the old silver harmonica to her lips, and the ragtime music flowed out, encircling and caressing the great tree. The leaves shimmered and danced upon their delicate stems. Without warning, however, she stopped and began to cry. "Oh, Lord, I'm so happy. I'm so at peace here with you. I just hate it that my God-fearing mama didn't know about Daddy's harmonica music, about your sound." "Don't cry, Hannah," replied the voice from the tree. "She knows now. She knows now." "Lord," asked Hannah, "can I ask you a favor?" "Sure, Hannah. In fact, according to all the ancient rules of storybooks, you can ask three favors, any three you wish," replied the tree voice. "Well, you see, Lord, I was on my way to church this morning to pray over Ruby Robinson. She's real sick and has a big family depending on her. She'd be there over at church, but I hate to leave you. Could you cure her, Lord?" "Sure, Hannah. Whatever you ask," was the reply. And at that very moment, not a split second later, there came a great thunderous shout of praise from St. Stephen's Baptist Church. "There, that's one favor granted. You've got two more," said the voice from the tree. "Lord, it's my boy Leroy. Find Leroy, a hard-working, Bible-loving, full-breasted, clean-living, fun-loving woman, and also a good job that he can like and stick to." "Done," said the tree, "within the day, I promise you. But so far, Hannah, these favors have been for others. Don't you have something you want just for yourself?" Hannah was silent for a long time. Then she smiled. "Well, Lord, if I have any wish at all, it is that I might be just as happy as this all the days of my life. I love being this close to you, hearing you laugh, listening to your music and your wonderful stories." The great branches of the tree gently reached down and encircled Hannah as the tree spoke. "You sure, Hannah? Real sure that this is what you really want? To hear my laughter and music like this all your days?" "Yes, Lord, no doubt about it. I'm positive," she answered. Then the tree said, "So be it. Your favor is granted, and for all of your days you will be in me and I will be in you. You will live forever in my harmony and in the laughter of heaven." "That's a promise, Hannah, and I always keep my promises." It was high noon as the Sunday worshipers poured out of St. Stephen's sauna and headed for home. A group of ladies from the church were walking together across the little park. They were chatting about the miracle that had happened to Ruby Robinson. They were also wondering why Hannah hadn't been at church. It wasn't like her to miss church, regardless of the weather. Then they saw the green park bench and stopped, frozen in their footsteps. For neatly draped across the bench was a large white dress, and beside it, neatly arranged, a set of undergarments. Beneath the bench were two high-heeled white shoes. The noontime air was overflowing with the rhythm of ragtime, but no musician could be seen anywhere. However, searching for the source of the sounds, they looked up into the branches of the great tree and saw Hannah. She was perched in the crotch made by two huge branches, was playing her harmonica as if she were possessed. She wore a smile as wide as Wyoming. This is not the end of the story, but almost the end. You should know that Hannah lived for almost another 30 years after that Sunday, and died at the ripe age of 85. She died as she had lived, a happy woman. In fact, those who knew her said that they had never known a happier and more contented woman. Even if for the last 30 years of her life, she lived as a patient at the state hospital for the insane. The end. When something horrible happens, you fall back on what you know, on what you grew up doing, on what you grew up watching your parents do. So for Mary and Mary and Salome, it would have been easy to remember their mothers and their grandmothers when someone died, gathering the spices, doing the things you did when a loved one died, to wrap and anoint the body for burial. They would have remembered that because of when Jesus died, not everything had been done. So once the sun set and Passover was over and they could do things again, they would have started gathering the spices, the same spices their grandmothers had seen their grandmothers gather, the same spices their mothers would have taught them the words for when they were little. And even though these weren't the jars their mothers had actually used, they would have remembered those stories and those moments. They would have maybe told those stories to one another as they pulled all of these supplies together, remembering things from when they were little to stave off the memories of the horror that had just happened, to stave off trying to figure out what would happen when they got to the tomb. Maybe you'll have to sort out for yourselves exactly when they would have had to start talking about that stone, when they would have stopped telling stories about when they learned which name for which spice, to whose funeral they started helping and stopped watching, about when they were allowed to do things instead of just watch, instead of to partake, instead of to hand things in. Maybe you know that moment of panic when all of the preparation and the busy work that you've been occupying yourself with is about to be overtaken by the practicality of the moment you're still trying to live through. When these three women realized that no matter how much tradition, how much practice they had dealing with death, they still couldn't deal with this death. There was still a stone in the way. This was still bigger and different and not what they were ready to do. Maybe they made a plan. They figured if they all teamed up, they could move the stone. After all, they'd followed Jesus. Surely they could navigate this last thing. Maybe they decided if they just sat there, someone would come help them to get them to leave. Nobody wants a bunch of troublesome women in the graveyard. People will do all sorts of things to get rid of troublesome women, after all. But they didn't need any of those plans. When they got there, the stone was gone. And so was Jesus. This strange person was there, and he tells them that Jesus was risen, and they flee. The women who have been there through it all, who have probably cooked and cleaned, who have packed and gotten the disciples through all of Jesus's traveling and ministry, who have stayed at the foot of the cross when all of the men have fled to hide. This is the point where they can't take it anymore. the women who knew what to do in the face of death, who, as soon as they could get up and pack the spices and the cloths so they could handle the body of their friend and their teacher too. Don't know what to do without that. And we're told they flee in terror and in amazement. That's important. It's not just fear. It's terror and amazement. How many of you remember the last really big life change you went through? The last time you moved. You had a child move out. Or you had a grandchild on the way. You watched someone take their first steps. You watch all of this happen, and in your head, you know the whole world is about to change. And one part of you is going through everything that can possibly go wrong. And one part of you knows this is going to change everything. Terror and amazement. Not completely unlike what these women were caught up in. The original manuscript of Mark ends here. Jesus never comes back after this. We're left with women running off into the early morning sun, scared and amazed, and with a question of what happens next. We're left with terror and amazement. And we're left, if we take that extra second and we pull ourselves alongside Mary and Mary and Salome into that moment of peering into the tomb and seeing a stranger who is not Jesus and who is not dead, and realizing that this is again something completely new and different, we're left standing beside them as that terror and amazement takes over ourselves. And we are alongside them. And their question is our question. And we walk into Easter, or we run into Easter, in that same mix of emotions. And what are we going to do with this news? With this news that nobody in their right mind is going to believe. That Jesus, who died in public, who died quickly, is in fact not dead. And that this news should change the whole world. If our excitement about what this news can do can be greater than our terror over what people are going to say about us for telling them this news. If we can live long enough in this moment of excitement and terror to draw other people into it with us, so that what can change our world can change the whole world. This moment that Mary and Salome and all of us live can be lived by everyone this morning and all of Easter. I'm willing to do it. Are you? Amen.